There is a connection between parents and children. And we all know that. There's the emotional bond. There's the physical bond. There's the genetic bond. But there is a financial bond. The USDA estimates that parents will spend $261,000 raising one child from birth to 17 years old. $261,000. Let me break that down. $15,000 a year per child. That's a lot of money. If you were to take $15,000 and use it as an investment, what would you expect that money to do? Would you expect it to be worth less in 17 years, or would you expect it to be worth more in 17 years? What we're going to talk about is how you can take the money you're supposed to be spending on your kids, and by the way, we don't believe that $17,000 or $15,000 a year is an accurate number, and we'll tell you what we spent on our kids because we use the same calculations. But what we want to do is show you a way that you can take the money you are going to spend on your kids and use it as an investment tool to teach them to be financially independent. And we aren't talking stocks and bonds. We aren't talking about all kinds of crazy investment schemes. We're talking about being money smart. So let me ask this. Well, I already told you the answer, but I just want you to show you what some people think. This is what the USDA says, and you know, people just get varying ideas of what it's going to cost. $61,000, $161,000, $261,000. And it is $261,000 is what they say. We have five kids. So for us, there's $1.3 million at stake. Does anybody have more than five kids? Do you need a loan? No, I mean, think about it. There's a lot of money at stake, and it's a big issue. So, $1.3 million at stake. What we're going to talk about is there's a fallacy, there's a problem that we've seen as we've coached families and as we've worked with couples on their finances, and that is that first off, 60% of parents are currently supporting their adult children. They haven't learned to cut the bond of connection financially between them and their children, and really it should be under control. So we discovered this rule called the 550-500 rule, and it's the ever-increasing cost of an unlearned lesson. And it doesn't just deal with finances. It deals with everything. But we're just going to talk about finances. So here's how it works. Between the ages of 0 and 5, if you don't find a way to help your child learn to buy the item themselves, it's going to cost you $5. Now, most of you can afford $5, right? $5 isn't much. You know, it's the toy at the checkout. It's the cute pair of shoes at the store. You know, it's not a lot. But it's repeated over and over again every year. So it could be $500 in a year, but $5. Now, not a big deal. But watch this. Between 6 and 11, the price escalates to $50. You know, the toys get a little more expensive. The technology kind of increases. Between 12 and 17, this is the techno stage, and that's the iPads, the iPhones, whatever, I don't know. We saw a cartoon that said iPhone, iPad, iPaid. We changed that because it was a dad sitting on the end of the couch, and we said iPhone, iPad, you paid, because that's how it works in our family. But that's the techno stage, 12 to 17. It keeps going if parents don't find a way to change the payment structure to push the responsibility onto the children. It escalates between 18 and 23 when they head to college. It's $5,000. It's for, you know, a wrecked car. It's for a credit card bailout. Parents send their kids to college without any financial training, give them a credit card. They think that's training them. $5,000 comes back to the parents.
It's for college tuition.
Yep. And this is the saddest part, because some children are still connected financially to their parents until their 50s or 60s. And we've seen it a lot. Parents being taken down by their adult children who have never been cut loose from the financial apron strings. And that's the $50,000 stage between 24 and 50. And that's for home foreclosures,
car repossessions, custody battles, divorces, and we have seen this in real life where we live, parents bailing their kids out. And so, you know, we're here to tell you today, we're here to create some hope that this doesn't have to be the case for you, and to kind of look at where you are now and take it seriously. Because when they're little, you just don't think about that. You don't think about when they're 24. But it will come someday when they are 24.
Faster than you can imagine. I can still remember our first child being born. Thank you. There's a spigot. There's a flow of cash from parent to child. The question is, who controls the flow? Have you ever been in the grocery store and seen one of those tantrum childs? Children? Lying on the floor, you know, at the checkout, who's controlling the flow? Now, we know that doesn't happen in our families. Hopefully. James McNeil, who is a marketing professor at Texas A&M, said that children between the ages of 4 and 12 control $29 billion a year in spending. That's $589 a month. They influence it. They influence it. Okay, just survey. How many times have you bought the cereal because a child has asked for a particular cereal? It happens. How about a movie? Yeah.
How about a certain vacation? It goes on and on and on. How about a restaurant that you go to? How about, you know, kids do influence where our money goes.
Jay Leno influenced his dad to buy a car that was had this super huge engine. It was a police cruiser. He was only 17. His dad didn't know what he was buying, but he trusted him because Jay worked on the car lot. He influenced his father to spend, at that time, about $10,000. It happens. We have three sons that were involved in Boy Scouts. And I'd go to the scout meetings, and I helped out. I was a treasurer for a while and did other duties. And after scout meetings, the dads would sit around and talk. And one day, one dad came up to me. He was the manager of an auto mechanic shop. And he said, "What do you do when, you know, they're just driving me crazy. Every weekend they want $20 to go to the mall. $20 to go to the mall." And he said, what do you do about that?" I said, "Well, first off, I wouldn't give it to them. And second off, I'd have them have a way to earn it." And he just kind of looked at me with this glazed look, because he didn't want to be the parent. He wanted to be kind of a friend. And so he never changed that.
Now, I need to interject here and say, if you grew up in a home where money equaled love, then some of the things that we're going to say the rest of this hour might be hard for you to listen to. But what I want to encourage you to do is to stay here and hang in there, because we're going to offer a different perspective than maybe you've ever heard about that. And we'll be around for you to come and talk to us. So hang in there if that's the kind of home you grew up in.
Yeah, a second one came to me and said, "What do you do about cars for your kids?" And I answered him in one word. I said, "Nothing." And he said, "Well, my daughter is really putting a full court press on me for a car when she turns 16. And she doesn't want a Chevy or a Kia or a Hyundai. She wants a BMW. Well, this is Scottsdale." Our kids, and we'll tell you a little more about it later, they pay for their own transportation, and they have done a phenomenal job. So gaining control of the spigot, gaining control of the flow, takes a long-term view of where the kids are going to end up, because it's real easy when they're small to say, "Oh, you're so cute, you know, and you gave me a kiss, and sure, I'll give that to you." But the long-term ramifications require long-term thinking and a habit and a system. And life is full of systems, and we're going to talk about that next.
So how did we start? Where did this whole thing go with our kids? And really, what happened was, we were at our church, and we were living a frugal lifestyle, and there was a man running a coaching ministry at our church, and there were all kinds of degreed people in this coaching ministry, trustees, financial planners, CPAs, accountants, and then us, homeschooling parents, okay? And the guy who was leading the ministry needed to step down, and he came to us and he said, I want you to do this. And we said, what? We are absolutely not qualified to do this. And he said, yes, you are, because you live it. I know you guys live it, and that's what we need. So we did do this. We had people in our home that we coached. That was many years ago. We can't do that now. But our son John was 9 years old at the time. And after a single mom and her kids left our home, he came up to us and he said, Mom and Dad, when are you going to do financial coaching with me? And we were like, wow, we never thought of that. So
we just thought he'd catch it.
Right. And we're realizing that you need to be absolutely intentional in those values and those principles that you want your kids to learn, just like we do with our homeschool. So Steve researched all kinds of things, read books, and he found a system that he modified to fit our family. And so if you think about it, there really are systems all around us. The solar system, the nervous system in our bodies, an electrical system in our houses. There's computer systems on our computers. And then really we have a lot of systems, if you think about it, in our daily activities, getting dressed, grocery shopping. Well, hopefully we have a system for grocery shopping.
We'll talk about that.
We'll talk about that later. Managing money, that's an important thing to have a system for. So most of us have systems, some that we don't even really think about. Another word would be routines. They're just things we do every day. They're routine. We don't really think about them. So we developed what we call our Money Smart Kids system, where the kids earn daily points. Those points translate into money. We have payday every week. For our family, it's on Sunday.
Now, what we learned in this whole process was, you know how they talk about we need to discipline our children, train them, when I use the word discipline, train them to be productive and all that stuff? Well, we realized that child discipline is really parents being disciplined in their approach. We need to be consistent in what we do if we're going to transfer anything to our kids. And that is particularly applicable with money.
And as homeschooling families, we already have routines in our home. We already have some measure of discipline. That's how we get our school accomplished. So having a system to teach your kids is so important for the long-term ramifications. You know, it doesn't matter what system you use, just that you have a system. Okay, so the kids will manage a small but ever-increasing amount of income. They learn to prioritize their money. Our kids, their money is divided up initially into give, save, and spend. And then as they get older, it's clothes, gifts, camps, and car insurance. And like Steve said earlier, a lot of times this is money we would normally be spending on them, only we're making a system for them to earn it. And, you know, we've had a lot of parents come to us and say, I don't think I should give my kids money for chores. They should be doing those chores because they are just part of our family. And I understand that philosophy, but what I would ask you all to do is to just take a bigger view. And if you don't attach earning money to something in your house, how are they going to learn how it works in the real world? Because when you get out in the real world and you have a job, your money earned is based on performance. The better an employee you are, the more money you earn. So those are things we want to start teaching our kids now, and they can grasp those things. Every job our kids have ever had, their employees have wanted to promote them, give them more hours. They've said they're some of the best workers they have in the companies where they are. So it does work, and you are teaching your kids real-life skills. The bottom line, like I said, is you need a system. We had one mom that wrote in and said she had an autistic child, and she modified our system because there was a battle going on every day since this child was autistic to get her to brush her teeth. She made a toothbrushing point. So every day, she got paid for brushing her teeth. Guess what? The battle ended because there was a positive reward attached to it, and it became a non-issue after a little while.
So we started this system in 1995, and we've done it up until Gosh, I mean, Joe is 21. He still does his envelopes, but he's got his own job. When our kids turn 16, they get their own jobs and earn their own money.
So we don't fund it anymore.
Right. Our kids are still on the system. And I don't want to push our system. What I want to do is I want to show you 8 transferable values that we implemented or infused into this system to teach our kids. And it's not just about money. And that's the coolest thing. But it is a very tangible, money is a very tangible, real life tool. Okay? So there are 8 things that we saw as a result of this. Hold on. 8 transferable values. Number 1. You know, Stephen Covey wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Successful People, and one of them was first things first. Getting done that first thing. Well, we made a point in our system called morning point. It was first things first. It was get up, get dressed, make your bed, eat breakfast, eat what's served without complaining. Attitude. Attitude. And it worked. We didn't have the arguments over, I don't like oatmeal. You know, it just was eliminated because if they had that attitude, they didn't earn their point.
And what we said was, hey, there's 5 kids that live in this house and everybody has different favorites. So mom's going to cook one thing, and it may not be your favorite, but it's Joey's favorite today. And you'll have your favorite in a couple of days. And so it taught our kids to really go with the flow. The second value was education. And obviously, we're all homeschool parents in here, so we know that that's a hugely valuable thing. But our school point meant that our kids did their schoolwork excellently, not perfectly, excellently, with a best effort. And that that they love to learn. We wanted to teach our kids to love to learn, not just to get something filled out or a task checked off their list. We wanted them to know that they could learn anything that they wanted. There was always information and resources out there. And so with our school point, it really did help the whole homeschool effort to have that point in there.
Then there was the chore point. And what was wild is we'd send them out to the garden to water the garden. And they'd come back and give us a dissertation on the activities of spiders. Because they were learning. Everything was learning. You know, but we had chores, and what we did is we built a chore chart. Because mom's brain is always going. And for her to sit there and go, okay, what's today? Tuesday? Okay, I want you to do this. I did that yesterday, Mom. You know, so we made this chart based on the ages of our kids, and we put different chores underneath it that they could do. And then we did this thing called shared control, where we said, okay, John, you're 16 years old. We need you to do 2 chores today. Go pick 2 off the chart. And then he'd come back with 2. And
they thought it was awesome because they got to choose mm-hmm. what they did. Within reason, like Steve said, obviously, if it was something that had been done the day before, they weren't going to do that again the next day. But having those lists meant that they had lots of variety to choose from. And there were, of course, regular things that had to be done. We have a citrus orchard, so certain times of the year, citrus had to be picked. We have dogs, so you know what goes with that, don't you? Okay, the yard had to be scooped up. So there's things like that that just are regular things that had to be done, and they knew that.
Now, just like in the real world, if they did the chore, but they did it with, guess what? No chore point. But they still had to do the chore. And that translates into life in at work. How long are you going to have a job if you're complaining about what you have to do all the time? So really, attitude is so important.
And how they did the job. I mean, there was times when we knew for sure that they knew exactly what they should have been doing, and they didn't do exactly what they should have been doing. Now, there's other times when they were learning something that they didn't quite get it right.
And for instance, watering the garden. We have one son who would water the garden and think about baseball. And you know, we didn't want to be harsh with him, but we went out there and said, look at these plants, the ones that are laying down on the ground. You know, that's not what they're supposed to be doing. Do you think there might be any correlation between how you watered and what they're doing? And then what I did is I took him out there and I said, okay, what I want to do is I want to dig a little hole and I want to show you how deep the water goes when you only water for 2 minutes. And so it was an education thing. But what it meant was there was accountability. We had to inspect what we expected. I think Howard Hendricks said that. We had to work alongside of them We don't just send a five-year-old out to do a chore. It requires us to almost take twice as long to do the chore in the training stage. But eventually, they become very proficient at it, and they have a sense of pride that they can do the job.
It seems like when our kids got to be like 12,
mm-hmm.
they knew how to do things so well that it really was like having extra adult help, not just kid help around the house.
There was
it was amazing.
Yeah, I don't know if any of you guys can relate to this, but I build bookcases, not for a living, for my wife. I build them, she fills them. Okay. Now, she would be satisfied with particle board bookcases with little metal brackets. But, you know, I like building with wood, and so I build them out of oak, and I make them look nice. So I took our son John out, and we were in the garage, and it took us several months to build the bookcases. And he didn't enjoy it the whole time. But he complained a little, and he told Annette that I was killing him by making him work so hard. But then there was a day when a friend came over. And he walks up to the bookcase and he leans on it and he says, "I helped build this." Yeah, sense of pride. And now he builds sets for productions. He travels around the country. He's a sound and lighting engineer. He builds all kinds of stuff. He's good.
Okay, the fourth point of the day was called Roundup. And because we live in Arizona, kind of a Western thing, we made a deal with all the kids. We said, let's walk around the house and pick up the things you left out. Because with seven of us living in the house, if three things were left out each day, that was 21 items a day. So it's over 100 items by the end of the week. And you know, it's real easy to get them enthused about Roundup when you say, when Roundup is done, then we'll have dessert. It works great. And so... And when you make it sort of a group movement, it's not just one person going off and doing it. It's everybody, you know, just kind of combing the house, getting that all dealt with. So that was cleaning up after yourself is another very important value that we wanted to instill in our kids.
It also teaches orderliness. God is a God of order. He set the solar system in place. The planets follow their orbits. They do what they're told to do. They have a place. Reading a few months ago and going through the Gospels and realized that when Jesus rose from the dead, I remember when Peter and John run into the tomb and they look inside, what did they see? Because if I'd been dead for 3 days and I came out in victory, I would have just thrown the stuff off, you know, and run out of the tomb. What'd they see? He folded up the clothes. That's order.
That's neatness. And I don't know how it is in your house, but in our house, the boys have a greater aversion to this than the girls do. So it takes a lot of extra patience and time to work with the boys.
So there was a period of time when Roundup included me inspecting the drawers. I'm not a military dad. I'm a right brain creative. But I knew it was important, so I would have the guys open their drawers and we'd check them. And
we had one son in particular that could just never find the clothes that he needed, socks and such. And so that's why for him this was an important value. Steve needed to go and make sure, we said, you need to pair up your socks when your laundry is done so you can find a pair that actually matches when it's time to get dressed.
And later when we visited him before he graduated from boot camp and he had to roll his socks a specific way and make his bed a specific way, it wasn't that far of a stretch from what we did at home. It was amazing. Okay, the next value that we saw that it taught was generosity and giving. And what we did with our kids is they got paid every Sunday, and when they were younger, they had three envelopes, give, save, and spend. And we prescribed certain percentages, 10% to give, 20% to save, and then they could spend 70%. As they got older, that changed, and we'll talk about that in a second. But the generosity part really started before they even earned money. And that would be if they had a toy that they no longer wanted, or they saw a friend who really liked a toy, we encouraged them to be generous with it. Start where they are. So giving things away, giving toys away, giving clothes away, giving to missionaries. Abby, who's out at our booth, she's 19 now, she, for some reason, had this incredible affection for Johnny Erickson Tata. Don't know why, but there was a time Johnny came and spoke at our church, so we went there, and Abby was, what was she, 3 years old?
I don't know, like five. She carried her book around, her biography, the adult biography. She carried her book around all the time.
But she got to sit on Johnny's lap
she
and have a conversation
her
with her.
It was adorable.
And so when she's 10 or 11, she wants to give to Johnny. Well, we're not going to stop that. That is an incredible heart overflowing with gratitude. But that's the kind of value we want to kindle in our children. So by having them, giving them the ability to earn money regularly, they also have the ability to give regularly. And it starts a lifelong habit of generosity.
And you know, we were so blessed as our kids were growing up to be given bags of hand-me-downs. Literally, I mean, I'd have a bunch of bags that people had given me. I'd spend the day sorting them, categorizing them, boxing them, and then I'd pass on what we didn't need, and he'd look at me and I'd go, just watch. I just know it. Another bag is coming. And sure enough, within a week, somebody else, it became overwhelming at times, but we would not have survived without that. And so it was so awesome when we could also do the same thing to help other people. Okay, savings. Like Steve said, 20% of all our kids' money that they earn, we encourage them to put in savings. And we're not too far off. The millionaire next door saves 15 to 20% of their income. And even though initially when our kids were little, they really didn't know what they were saving for, they knew. They were okay. We had taught them delayed gratification throughout their life for their spend money. And it was so awesome when they got to the point where they were ready to go to college and they were ready to buy a car, that they had money in savings. It was sitting right there. I've heard a lot of financial gurus say, don't do that to your kids. They couldn't possibly understand that. But our kids have, totally, completely. And when they're little, it's so awesome to have them save their money till they get like $25, and then they go open a savings account at the bank, and you make a big deal out of it, and they start their savings account at the bank, and then they make deposits, you know, once every 6 months with the money in their save envelope. Just to teach them that discipline, that saving is a part of life, and it's really important to have some money tucked away for an emergency or a rainy day, and in their case, it's usually college and a car.
All of our kids have gone to college. None of them have taken out any loans. And we haven't paid a penny. And it can be done. And that, in this book, The Money Smart Family System, that is the largest chapter in the book talking about college. And it's actually being considered to be used in a curriculum at Grand Canyon University in Arizona as required reading for every student who goes through it, because we talk about how to save money going to college and how to be wise about avoiding loans. All right, value of clothes. This is wild. I mean, who would think that clothes could be a learning tool for children? But here's what we did. Give, save, and spend until they're 11 years old. When they turn 11, and actually in Abby's case, she was the caboose, she was the youngest one, at 9 years old, she said, I'm doing that. They were required to pay for their own clothes. Now, some people look at us like, you've got to be kidding me. How can you? Okay, watch this. They earned, at that point, about 15 cents a point. They could earn 23 points a week, 4 points a day, Monday through Friday, 3 points on Saturday, none on Sunday. That was 23. If they did anything extra without being asked and earned 2 extra points, they got double pay. So it's $7.50 a week. That's what we were investing in them if they earned it. They were required to put 10% in give, 20% in save, half of what was left, so 35% into clothes, and the other half they could spend. Now, this is a real-life situation, because allowances, when you give a child money just because they're part of the family and don't require anything of them, allowances like you getting a paycheck and saying, ho-ho, I just got $800 this week. Let's go spend it. I don't have to pay any bills. I don't have any responsibilities. That is not real life. So we needed a real life spin on this. So at 11, they start paying for their own clothes.
And really paying for their own clothes doesn't really entitle them to go to the mall and spend money, unless you want to peruse clearance racks, and that can take a very long time. But what it does entitle them to do is shop at thrift stores, consignment stores, rummage sales, garage sales. And our kids have some of the nicest clothes, and they pay pennies on the dollar.
Not just our kids.
For their clothes.
I want to ask you a question. Okay. How many of you had parents that earned more money than you're earning now? Okay. Now, watch this. If I earned $150,000 a year, and maybe some of you earn that, maybe some of you earn less, more, whatever, and I lived that lifestyle that was associated with $150,000, lived in a certain size house, drove a certain size car, and I also gave my children those things that I could afford at $150,000 a year. Right? That's not a problem. As long as I'm putting money in savings and, you know, IRA, and I'm paying off debts and everything like that, that's okay. I can afford to do that. But what if my child never earns that much money? What have I done to them? You see, I've taught them a lifestyle that they can't afford. And the result is that they will try to live that lifestyle. And if they aren't wise, they will go into debt to live that lifestyle because, you know, mom always had a cleaning person come in and dad always took the car to the dealership and we always shopped at this store and on Sunday we always went out to this restaurant. And so, especially for our daughters who get married to a guy, and we've seen this so many times, I call it the golden handcuffs. The daughter is raised in a well-to-do home or an indulgent home that couldn't afford to do this. And in one case, she married a guy whose dad ran YMCA camps and lived in camp housing. And he didn't earn a lot, but he was the sweetest guy you'd ever meet. And so she put pressure on him to get a better job and to earn more money. She was fine for the first couple of years because they were in love. But when the kids started coming along and he could not provide the things that her parents provided for them, it created emotional distress and pressure. And they ended up getting divorced.
But then we know of another couple where she was raised in an affluent home and she married a guy that came from a farming community. And the first couple of years that they were married, she was pressuring him to go to school, to be a physical therapist. She wanted more money. And they were one of the couples that we ended up coaching. And we taught them how to live frugally, how to take little things. It's the little things that add up, taking your lunch to work. And we met with them for quite a while, and they got the hang of the whole budgeting system, which we'll talk about next hour. And then they moved away. And he ended up going into sales with wine cellars, and they lived in Colorado, and we were up in Colorado, decided to visit them. And she said, "I am so happy." And I said, "You are? What do you think the change is?" She said, "I just learned to be okay with frugal living." And she said, "I went to garage sales and rummage sales and thrift stores. Her house was decorated so beautifully, you would not believe." And so she took her Pottery Barn tastes and she learned to be a home decorator. And she refinished furniture. She painted walls. Her home was absolutely beautiful, and they were happy, and they were content, and their kids were happy. And I just think there's so much stress in life today over finances that when you work with your kids and you try to transfer good values to your kids, don't worry if you didn't learn those in the home that you grew up in. Learn them right alongside as you're teaching them to your kids.
So that's the value of clothes. We both got off track. But the truth is, we took one area of life that was a realistic spending area that they were going to do for the rest of their lives and started teaching them. And it did grow because as they got older, then they started into the category of spending wisely.
Right.
And it encompassed a lot of other things.
And we already mentioned that when you give them their spend money, they need to realize that they shouldn't spend it all this week. That there may be something that they want 2 weeks from now that may require 2 weeks worth of their whole payday system to buy it. So our kids learn to meter things out. Really, it was delayed gratification and a wish list. We taught them to write wish lists. And the
it's
way
really,
that, and
it's really goal setting.
And the way that happened was, I think we were exchanging some toys for a birthday or something, and we were in Toys R Us, and at that time we only had 3 children, and of course they put all the nicest, most colorful toys right at eye level, okay?
For kids.
And they looked at all these toys and they were like, whoa, I'd really like those. And I looked at Steve and I went, we are in trouble. And so that's when I said, you know what? Let's write a wish list. Isn't that a great idea? So we just started making lists of everything they thought they wanted, each kid.
You know what was cool? As soon as we wrote it down on the list, they stopped whining about it. Because they knew that we took some action toward that. Now, they didn't know that they would get it, but they knew that Mom and Dad wrote lists for everything.
And
we had Christmas lists.
And the coolest thing is we did have relatives asking when the kids were little what they wanted for birthdays and Christmases. And so most of the time, they got pretty close to everything on the wish list. Our oldest daughter, Becky, who's in the booth today, the funniest story, they even give me wish lists now for Christmas, okay? And she's 27, okay, and she still gives me a wish list. And I think it was 2 years ago, she looked at me, she said, Mom, I've had this on my wish list for 3 years. If I don't get it this year, I'm buying it. I made sure she got it. So I just think it's funny that our kids can just wait. They can put it on a list, and they're like, I'll get it. Eventually, I will get it. Okay, Abby, when she was 9 years old, really wanted an American Girl doll. We had all the books. They had been given to her as gifts for birthdays and Christmases, and wow, that was a really big expense. I think knew they were $120, $150, but this was years ago. And so we looked on eBay, and we saw that eBay had one. We could get them for around $60 to $70. And, you know, when you're 9 years old and you're on our payday system, it takes literally months to save up enough money for an American Girl doll.
She was earning about $5 a week. 10% to give, 20% to save.
And she did it. She did it.
And it took her about 6 months.
And when we bid on a couple of auctions and it didn't come through, and then I think it was like the third auction we bid on, and she got that doll. She was jumping up and down. Can you picture a little 9-year-old girl jumping up and down? She got her doll, and then when the truck arrived, she jumped up and down again, and it was just so exciting. And this kid is amazing today. She's 19 years old. She's in our booth, and you know, she had a trampoline on her wish list. And one day,
she
was saving money. She was, you know, looking at the prices on Craigslist and everything, saving her money. And then one day, so she had saved like $100 or $150. And one day we get an email. I'm in the choir at church, and it was to all the choir members. And it was, there's a lady that's going to be moving, and she's got items she's getting rid of. And one of them is a trampoline. And it was like free. And I looked at Steve, and Steve ran and said, Abby, you want a free trampoline? And she didn't quite jump up and down anymore.
She did later on the trampoline.
But she got her trampoline. So it's really awesome to watch our kids grow up with all of these values that we've taught them and to see them be able to save and wait and find deals and do research. And it's just awesome.
So we taught them to spend wisely. And they also learn to research, and they learn the value of research and waiting. And it's incredible. But here's what we did. This is kind of sum it up. There were 8 values we taught them that they got from the system. It cost us something, though. It cost us about $1,200 a year.
To fund the system for 5 kids. And one time we were speaking, and we had a single mom come up to us. And she said, I just really don't have even that. And what we said was, there's a way that you can start, think of ways that where you can start a little home business, like a hobby, to generate money to fund a system. We knew one family, they were in ministry, and they just really never had a lot of funds, and they had a pretzel business. And every week, they made pretzels, and they called up their friends, and they sold pretzels to their friends each week.
And that's how the kids learn to manage money.
Right.
It works. It just works. And you're investing in your kids. And we got, as a result of that, 8 values that they live today. But we also learned that there were some things we didn't plan on. They were like byproducts of it. And we're going to share a few of those right now. These are byproducts of Money Smart Parenting. Number one.
Character building activities. We chose, just like Michael Ferris has, I don't know, well, he shared it at the luncheon yesterday. And he was saying how homeschoolers, a lot of us are not engaging the culture. We're wanting to isolate our kids. We're wanting to protect our kids. And there's value in that, but then there's the culture out there. What's the balance between engaging the culture and keeping your kids pure and honest and with the convictions, the godly convictions that you want to instill in them? And so we decided we were going to throw them out there, so to speak, but we were going to be out there with them in the trenches. So we had our kids do scouts, and Steve was always at the scout meetings, always at the campout weekend. Our daughters did 4-H. I was always at the 4-H things. I helped with fundraisers. We were always involved in our kids' lives. Our oldest daughter did the Congressional Award out of D.C., which was just an awesome program.
How many have heard of Congressional Award program?
Anybody heard of Congressional Award? Oh my gosh.
It's perfect for homeschooling
it's
families.
It's a minimal fee. It's a 2-year program. They have to do physical fitness. They have to do volunteer. They have to do personal development. And they have to do an expedition or an exploration, but really any week-long missions trip with YWAM or your church would qualify. And our oldest daughter did this.
And now it's on her resume, and it says Congressional Award Gold Medal Recipient. Nobody knows what it is, but it is a big deal. But if you're if you're an employer looking to hire somebody and you see Boy Scouts, Eagle Scout, 4-H, or Congressional Award Gold Medal Recipient, those are things that stand out. They open the doors in their resume. So the byproduct was that we ended up getting our kids involved in these character-building activities that built towards scholarships and towards their future jobs.
And also help them figure out how to navigate the culture that's out there. Mm-hmm. Because we were walking alongside of them, talking with them constantly about what they were experiencing, what they were seeing, and it was kind of adjusting them so it wasn't culture shock when they one day stepped out there and tried to figure out where they were, what planet they were on.
All right, now, the second thing that we saw, that was kind of a byproduct of all this, was we developed systems for controlling technology. I can't remember where we were, but they were talking about how many kids have televisions, VCRs, DVD players, streaming video. Isn't it amazing how fast things, you know, I go into the bathroom now at our house and I put my hands under it like this. And I wait. Oh, man, technology. But technology is all around us. And the stuff that can come into our homes is like unlimited. And so we had to find a way to manage it, to teach them to value it, but also not become addicted to it. And we've seen the addictions, especially in our young men. And, boy, I can't medal recipient. Those are things that stand out. They open the doors in their resume. So the byproduct was that we ended up getting our kids involved in these character-building activities that built towards scholarships and towards their future jobs.
And also help them figure out how to navigate the culture that's out there. Mm-hmm. Because we were walking alongside of them, talking with them constantly about what they were experiencing, what they were seeing, and it was kind of adjusting them so it wasn't culture shock.